Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 11 of the Charge Running Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to talk all about the Nike Vaporfly. So this shoe claims to make you run faster. So in today's episode, I'm going to discuss everything about the shoe, if it actually helps you run faster, and if so, by how much. I'll also talk about some of the controversy behind the shoe and if it should be legal or not. So let's dive right in. So for the past 50 years, running shoes have only made these small changes and updates in terms of functionality and improving performance. Some advancements in shoe technology have made just a small ripple in the running world, but there has not been anything like this tsunami that the Nike Vaporfly created. If you look at pictures from major marathons and look at the elite field especially, you're gonna now be looking at about 95% of these top runners wearing a version of the Nike Vaporfly. It could be the Nike Vaporfly 4%, which was the first version of the shoe. It could be the next percent, or it could even now be the Alphafly. So Nike claims, though, that it reduces the energetic cost of running, which will make you run faster. This, of course, is a huge claim, and it's going to leave a lot of people skeptical. So does this $250 shoe deserve all the hype it's getting? And if so, how much will it actually help improve your race times? So this is going to be one of the main questions I'm going to be exploring and addressing today. But to give a little bit of backstory, racing flats, they've always been a necessity, especially for elite marathoners and elite distance runners. They're shoes that are designed to be a little bit lighter weight, just so you can run just that little bit faster on race day. Shoe companies, they often have just struggled trying to find the perfect mixture of cushion and weight, because adding extra foam and adding extra cushion, the thought was, it was going to be increasing the weight of the shoe, which is going to be counterproductive for fast marathon times. So up until very recently, most racing flats were designed with just a little bit of cushion just to give you some protection from all the pounding on the roads, but they were mainly focusing on just staying lightweight, so they didn't have a substantial amount of cushion underneath them. But then along came the Nike Vaporfly 4%, which was released to the public in 2018. But prototypes of the shoe, they were actually being worn by Nike-sponsored athletes in as early as 2016. So since the introduction of this controversial racing shoe designed by Nike, which, like I said, originally started off as the Vaporfly 4%, it was lab tested and proven to make runners more economical by 4% on average, according to the original study that was out of Colorado University Boulder in 2017. Then in 2019, the improved version, the Vaporfly Next Percent, was shown to improve your running economy by closer to 5% on average. So this does not mean you're gonna run a 4 to 5% faster time, but what it actually means is your body is going to be using about 4 to 5% less oxygen to run at a given speed, which is going to make you more economical overall. So if you think of it in terms of cars, which is the best analogy I can think of, running economy is basically looking at how fuel efficient a car is. Would you rather drive a car that can get 30 miles per gallon while driving at 60 miles an hour? Or drive one that can go 4% faster but still uses the same amount of fuel? So that's kind of the same thing with the shoe and the runner. Originally, many scientists and runners, they believed that this was just more of a placebo effect, accrediting the performance benefits from people wearing them to just being more of a psychological advantage. And anytime a new technology or a new supplement like this hits the market that claims to make you 4% faster or 4% stronger or makes you lose weight 4% quicker, some other study comes along and just disproves the claims. But this is not the case with the Nike Vaporfly. With the shoe, there's actually no non-responders. So everyone that used the shoe and every test that has been followed up with it, they showed performance increases with running in the Vaporfly. So as I said, that first initial study was done by Nike. So of course they're going to try to make an outcome that makes it benefit their product so they can just use it as a marketing stunt. But as I said, what's so unique about this shoe, so many other companies and lab tests were done by these other companies and researchers that came to the same conclusion that the Nike Vaporfly will allow you to run faster using less effort. So this in itself is enough evidence just to show the legitimacy of this shoe. But to go along with these dozens of lab tests, marathon times since the birth of the shoe have improved at a dramatic rate. Back in 1968, the world record for the men's marathon stood at 2:09:36, and that was by Derek Clayton. And essentially within every 20 years after that, the world record dropped by about 3 minutes. So it was dropping by about 3 minutes every 20 years. By 2008, Haile Gebrselassie, he set the world record at the Berlin Marathon, where he ran 2:03:59. So as we can see, it isn't uncommon, like I said, for the world record to fall by about 3 minutes every 20 years. But what is uncommon is for it to drop nearly 2.5 minutes in just half that amount of time. And that's exactly what happened when Eliud Kipchoge set the current world record in 2018, where he officially ran 2:01:39, wearing the Nike Vaporfly Next Percent. Kipchoge, he isn't the only one to improve from using the shoe. In 2014, though, Dennis Kometo, he set the world record of 2:02:57. So this was before the Nike Vaporfly was created. Now his world record from just 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it isn't even among the top five fastest times in history, because those top five times now belong to runners wearing versions of the Nike Vaporfly. And this doesn't even count the 1:59:40 marathon that Eliud Kipchoge ran in October of 2019. So once again, going off of that sub 2 hour marathon that he ran, the normal world record does improve pretty naturally by about 3 minutes every 20 years. So how did Eliud Kipchoge just run under 2 hours for the marathon and running over 3 minutes faster than the world record from just 2014? As I mentioned, it was not an official world record when he ran under 2 hours, but he does hold the current world record. So 3 minutes, like I said, normally takes about 20 years, but Kipchoge did it in about 5 years. Although his sub 2 hour marathon doesn't count as an official world record, it still would have not been possible without the improved version of the Vaporfly, which was the Alphafly that he ran in. And also it was just in a controlled time trial setting. But also, along with the men's recent accomplishments in the Vaporfly, the women's marathon world record was destroyed by Bridget Koski in the Chicago Marathon in 2019, when she ran 2:14:04 in a pair of the Nike Vaporfly Next Percent, which beat Paula Radcliffe's world record by 81 seconds. And Radcliffe's world record was already such an outlier, because only one other woman has run within 2.5 minutes of Paula Radcliffe's world record from 2003. Then Bridget Koski beats that by nearly a minute and a half. So this just shows us that people are clearly getting an advantage from wearing the shoe. But how much of an advantage is the real question. When this shoe first came out, many thought the 4% at the end of the name of the shoe was how much faster it would make you. But as I kind of mentioned, it actually increases your running economy by 4% on average. So a 4% improvement in oxygen saving abilities translates roughly to about a 2.6% improvement in time for a 2:03 marathoner. So to be safe, let's just assume that Kipchoge only received half of the performance claim by having a 1.3% improvement in his marathon time from the shoes. You may be thinking 1.3% doesn't sound like a whole lot, but for someone who's running a 202.57 or 203 marathon, which is what the world record was before the Vaporfly was introduced, that 202.57 improves their performance by roughly a minute and a half, which is right where Kipchoge's current marathon world record is from Berlin in 2018. So if the shoe is taking off a minute and a half from the top marathoners in the world, we're basically seeing these same guys that ran 203 in 2014, but now they're running 201 something strictly because of these improvements in shoe technology that we've had. There's a sports scientist and professor, Ross Tucker. He explained and quoted, "We bypassed physiology by improving the economy through the use of the shoe. So the shoe basically caused us to make this quantum leap of 20 years into the future for marathoning." While I do strongly believe that Eliud Kipchoge is the greatest men's marathoner of all time, he isn't physiologically superior than the runners who are running 203 in 2014. So going back and looking and kind of analyzing that 4% improvement in running economy, it may not sound like much, but for example, if you're a 3-hour marathoner and you're running in a normal pair of racing flats, which is also very important to understand and remember that this 4% improvement was from the next best racing flat at the time, not from your normal training shoe. So if you're going from a normal everyday training shoe that you used to race in to the Nike Vaporfly, you're going to be getting more than a 4% economical boost from the shoes. But if you're a 3-hour marathoner and, like I said, in a normal pair of racing flats, who is now running in a pair of Vaporflies, and you're using 4% less oxygen, your time would improve to a 2:55:19 just from the shoes. And of course, that's going to vary because everybody's biomechanical, everybody has different biomechanics, and there's a lot of things that have to be taken into account. But that's just the average that a 3-hour marathoner would be brought down to a 2:55:19 just from the shoes. But so personally, I think a 2:55 sounds a lot better than a 3-hour marathon. So if you're really close to a Boston qualifying time or a new personal best, that 4% can mean a lot. So remember, I arrived at that time difference because a 4% running economy benefit equals about a 2.6% performance benefit in minutes. So another example is if you're a 4-hour marathoner, that 2.6% is going to be saving you about 6 minutes and 14 seconds. If you're a 3-hour and a 30-minute marathoner, that's going to be about 5.5 minutes of total saving time just from switching from to a Nike Vaporfly. As I said, racing flats, they've always been a necessity, especially for elite marathoners and elite runners. Shoe companies, they would often struggle trying to find this perfect mixture of cushion and weight, because like I said, adding extra foam would increase the weight of the shoe, which would obviously be counterproductive for fast marathon times. So it's proven that these shoes do work, but what is so different about them? A lot of people wonder. And looking at it, there's really three main things. The first one is the foam inside of the shoe. The second is the carbon fiber plate. And the third is the stack height. Now, this is just about the normal Nike Vaporfly 4% and the Next Percent. The Alphafly has some differences from these, but I'm just going to be covering these main three. Like I said, the three main differences is the foam inside the shoe, this carbon fiber plate, and the stack height that the shoe has. So the foam Nike uses in all the Vaporfly models is called Zoom X foam. And an aerospace company actually created it. Most foams in shoes, they return about 65 to 75% of your energy from each step. But this Zoom X foam that's in the Nike Vaporfly, it's the most responsive foam on the planet, and it returns about 88% of your energy. So along with that, the foam, it's also lighter weight than traditional shoe foams, which means you can just package more of it into a large volume without adding additional mass to the shoe. All this extra foam is what increases the stack height of the shoe, which is basically just how much cushion you see in the shoe underneath your foot from the ground. So it increases the stack height of the shoe, which allowed Nike just to put a curved carbon fiber plate in the middle of the ZoomX foam just because they had more real estate to work with. So as your foot hits the ground, energy travels through the foam, then is stored in the carbon fiber plate, and then it acts as a spring-like mechanism so the energy can be returned to help you with your forward propulsion. So this, a lot of people have said this and quoted it as a form of mechanical doping, and it has changed the way that we have to view recent successes and future successes in the marathon. It is not an even playing field. People that would have been running marathons 20, 30, 40 years ago, they would have been running faster times if they had this shoe technology that we have today. So the same 3 hour or 2 hour and 30 minute marathon does not mean the same thing as it meant even 10 years ago. With how much improvements this shoe makes in performance, elite races now, they're not always won by the faster runner, but now you have to question, like, who has the best shoe? The counter argument to this is that if elite runners know how much the shoes help and their opponents aren't wearing it, they should just wear them. But the problem is sponsorships for these elite runners. 10 years ago, it didn't matter if two elite runners or marathoners, which were technically the same speed or very close, even if one was sponsored by Nike and the other was sponsored by Adidas, the better person was going to be the one to win. But now, like I said, if the Nike athlete is wearing the Vaporfly and the Adidas runner isn't allowed to because it would break her contract, the Nike athlete clearly has an advantage, which can result in an extra thousands of dollars from race winnings being lost just because of a certain shoe. The current rule is now that they, luckily they did limit the stack height on shoes, and they did limit only one carbon fiber plate can go in a shoe. So this does help, and some other companies are catching up. Brooks, Saucony, Asics, Adidas, they've had some shoes come out recently that are supposed to be the competitor of the Vaporfly, but I haven't seen any lab tests done showing how efficient they are at improving speed and race times. So the old rule was that all shoes must be freely available to the general public. And since then, like I said, in January, they now changed the rules because of the Nike Vaporfly. And they changed it that you have to have a limit on the stack height of the amount of cushion underneath the shoe, and you can only have one carbon fiber plate in a shoe. But before that, really the only rule was that the shoes must be freely available to the general public and can't have a significant advantage. But as I mentioned, the original Vaporfly 4% was released to the public in 2018. But Nike-sponsored marathoners actually ran in prototypes of them at the 2016 Olympic Marathon Trials. So at the marathon trials, the top three men or women to cross the finish line, they make the Olympic team. The third place woman in 2016, Shalane Flanagan, she was a Nike-sponsored athlete and was wearing one of the prototypes of the Vaporfly, and she beat the fourth place finisher, Kara Goucher, who didn't have a pair and didn't make the Olympic team, by 1 minute and 5 seconds. So with now knowing how much the shoe helps, you have to wonder if Kara missed out on being an Olympian because Shalane, the woman in front of her, was wearing a shoe that wasn't available to the public yet. So obviously that missed Olympic opportunity cost Kara thousands of dollars, sponsorships, and the experience of a lifetime. I'm really glad that they did put these regulations on shoe technology, because if there wasn't, you know, it's shoe technology that was going to be determining the outcome of these races. So I'm glad that other shoe companies are hopefully catching up to these shoes that Nike came out with, because there has not ever been this innovation like this in the shoe world, and it created this uneven playing field for a while, because you were handicapped if you were not racing in a pair of these Vaporflies. You were letting your competitors get, you know, a 2, 3, 5 minute head start on you. I myself have bought a pair of the Nike Vaporfly Next Percent. I've raced in them, I've run in them, and I am a huge believer, along with like all the scientific research that is out there proving that this shoe helps. The first time I put it on and I went on out for a tempo run, I really could feel a big difference. I ran a time that was faster than I have run in a while, and I pay all that to the shoe. So it's clear we're in a new age of shoe technology because of this mechanical advantage that runners are getting from these super shoes. So be prepared, because since the acceleration rate of marathon times, since the introduction of the Vaporfly, I believe that qualifying times to major marathons like Boston, New York, everything, it's gonna make another couple minute jump, making them harder to achieve. So if you're worried about placing in your age group or hitting those qualification times, it's best to just adapt to the changes and go spend $200, $250 on some super shoes, or $250 or $275 for the Vaporflies or Alphaflies. Because if you still don't think they make much of a difference, be prepared, like I said, to basically give everyone else a 3 to 5 minute head start at your next marathon. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast episode. As I ended with, I'm a huge fan and believer of the Vaporfly, not just because of the scientific research that it shows or how so many world records have been broken in this shoe, but also because I've tried it myself and I really did feel like it was giving me an extra push. Remember, if you haven't tried out Charge Running, now is the perfect time to download the app. Charge allows you to be coached by certified running coaches, but through live workouts. Join today to start your free trial. Well, I hope to see you guys again very soon in some of my live runs at Charge or in the next podcast episode. Reach out, shoot me an email, larry@chargerunning.com, if you have any questions. I'd love to help you out and hear from you. You guys rock. Can't wait to see you again. And as always, charge on.